Welcome into a new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway, here with my co-host, Mike Renner of The Messenger. He's back for his weekly segment with us. And Mike, I think out of all games so far this year, this is the one that I am most excited to talk with you about because there's just so many awesome storylines in this game. And there's so much on the line. I wouldn't say there's a ton on the line for Baltimore, but and we can talk about it later, but their schedule is a gauntlet. And yes, they're off to a hot start, but if they slip up here and drop a few, then it doesn't look, you know, as easy because they've got to go on the road to the West Coast twice. They still have to play the 49ers. They have a lot going on there. And Bengals having just lost to the Texans in a game that they've thought that they should have won. Like, there's just so much there. But before we get into all the different storylines, would you say right now this is the best Thursday night game on the NFL slate so far this year?
Oh, 100%. I don't even think it's close. And now I went to one. I went to the Lions-Packers Thursday night game earlier this year. I hope it turns out better than that one turned out in terms of, like, excitement, because that one was over by halftime. But, yeah, this one, even, like, the timing of it, too, is perfect because I don't want to call it a must-win for the Bengals. Like, they still are, you know, tied with the Texans right now for that final playoff spot. But, like, and, you know, I still think even if they lose this game, have a solid chance of making the playoffs. But if they have any hope of, like, getting through the AFC, you know, aspirations of the Super Bowl, which is, you know, the expectation every year when you have Joe Burrow, this is a game you have to win. Like, mm-hmm. If you want to win the AFC this year, you better show it right now. Because if not, you're going to be traveling on the road every single game in the playoffs. And it's a dogfight this year. There's just too many good teams. It's not, maybe there's no elite team in the AFC, but every team is good that's going to be making the playoffs.
So let's back up to the Houston game, and we won't get into it because, you know, the Bengals play on Thursday and it's time to change our focus to Baltimore. But one observation I had after the game, and having now covered Burrow for 3 years, I'm kind of, like, used to this. But in the locker room after the game, there wasn't, like, yelling, screaming, like, angry. It was just, like, a somber silence. And Burrow sat at his locker in silence and just stared into space for 10 minutes before he didn't even, like, take off. You know, usually he takes a shower and changes and comes and does his press conference. Like, he didn't even do that. He just went straight in the press conference room after sitting there for 10 minutes. And it just, you could tell, like, because he's just such a good competitor and he knows the importance of that game. He was, usually after a loss, he's pretty good about answering questions. Everything was like a one-word answer, almost. Like, you could tell that game really irked him. And, I mean, rightfully so, right? Would you say that the Bengals' loss to the Texans is more of an indictment on the Bengals? Or is it more of the Houston Texans are actually a lot better than we might give them credit for?
That's a great question. I think the Houston Texans are a lot better than people gave them credit for. Like, I do think that football team, especially the defensive side of the ball. And now, you know, I don't think the Bengals offensive line played well by any means. And it's still for my money, the biggest worry about this offensive line, or excuse me, about this team going forward. But the improvements they've had from guys like Jonathan Greenard, Sheldon Rankins, mm-hmm. who had monster games against the Bengals, like, I think that side of the football has gotten underrated for the Houston Texans here. Everyone's talking about CJ Stroud, but their defense playing very well too. So the Texans, I think, are legit. But yeah, to go back to Burrow being like, when it's Burrow and Boyd, you know, probably the two most respected guys in that locker room on the off side of the ball, when they're like, those are the two guys who make, like, the big mistakes down the stretch. It is hard. Like, it's mm-hmm. hard to, it's a tough pill to swallow when that is the case for you. It's just like, those are the guys you expect every week will show up. And it's usually the other guys we're here talking about why things didn't go the greatest. And so when Boyd drops that and then Burrow makes, you know, some of the picks that he threw, it's going to leave a bad taste in your mouth because you know that you left plays out in the football field they should have made.
Well, it was crazy because the Bengals didn't deserve to win that game. And the fact that they were still in it until the end with a chance to win, it speaks to just how good the Bengals can be with Burrow. Because, I mean, if Burrow doesn't drop that dime to chase down the field. I mean, that game was looking like it might be a blow. Yeah, that was Brian Callahan said that might have been like top two of most ridiculous plays Joe Burrow has ever made. And the fact that Jamar Chase's back is like in shambles, and that everything about that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, and like if he puts it really anywhere else, it slows him down enough and he gets caught, but it was just like he didn't break stride, man. That was about as good a throw as I've seen from Burrow.
It's funny because literally when Burrow had that famous line a couple years ago that was like, F it, Jamar's down there somewhere, like that's really like how they operate. It brings up questions though, and there's a couple topics that I wanted to get your thoughts on, and specifically one at the end that I think you're research and analysis on the draft can really help provide our listeners some insight here. But before I ask you about that, because those are more defensive questions, do you worry at all? So the Bengals had 5 punts in a row after they had their opening drive. They went down and scored a touchdown, 5 punts in a row. Outside of that San Francisco game, they have had a lot of games where they just go into these slumps. And they rely on how they played at the beginning of the game and at the end to get them through. And when you go through the AFC teams that they might have to play if they make it in the playoffs, and I mean, even forget about the playoffs, like down the stretch, like they've got games coming up against the Ravens, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Chiefs, the Browns, the Steelers twice. Like they still have some really good teams to play. Do you worry that, and I know you have to also factor in T wasn't playing, right? Are they too reliant upon Jamar and Joe's just ability to go off script and just play like backyard football there and just say, throw it, Jamar's down there somewhere?
I don't think so, because I don't think it's any different than it was the last few years, right? Like that's just what they do. It's when you have guys like that are that good, you want to rely on it because you think they will be, you know, over the long term, over, you know, 17 game season, playoffs, whatnot. You trust Burrow to be more consistent than Joe Mixon in the running game, right? Like you trust him to figure out the answers. And yeah, he might go into a few drives where he doesn't have answers, but in the long run, you don't get, you know, the big explosive play to Jamar Chase without, you know, calling as many passes as they did in that game. What, 47 dropbacks? Like that's kind of just the risk you run. And when you, again, don't have a elite offensive line that allows you to really run full drop back concepts, you know, deeper, longer, you know, down the football field, intermediate concepts consistently, then you're going to rely on shorter plays to kind of lull defenses to sleep, shorter passes to lull defenses to sleep. And if those get taken away, you have to, you know, you have to put up so many of those in a row to drive down the length of the football field. A few mistakes here and there, all of a sudden, that's how you punt as many times in a row as they did. So that's just kind of the way of the world. You wish you had the better offensive line that could afford him more time and basically allow you to play a different brand of football. But that's kind of just the way you have to operate right now with where you're at with this offensive line. And it's just going to look a little inconsistent until they start to play better. And that's, you know, will that ever happen with this line? TBD.
So that's what I want to talk about is the offensive line. The problem here is they've spent an obscene amount of money on this offensive line to get it to be better. And I just wonder, I think they masked some of their deficiencies, like against San Francisco, they held their own. Do you think it's, I did not think Orlando Brown had a very good game last week against the Texans, and Sheldon Rankins just blew up everything in the middle. Alex Kappa had a tough day, and it's kind of been an up and down season for him and to his standards, because I mean, they said before he got injured last year that he was playing as well as any guard in the NFL. Where do you think the Bengals offensive line issues come from? Do you think it's scheme? Do you think it's coaching and technique, or do you think it's the players, or is it all of the above?
I mean, they could do more to alleviate it via scheme, right? They definitely could. You could run more under center play action. You could run, and especially I think they should, when guys like T. Higgins are out, I wish they did do more max protection and get more, like, you know, you don't want your third tight end getting seven targets in this game, right? Like you would rather he's in as an extra blocker, and then you have a little more time for Jamar Chase to get open. You have a little more time for Tyler Boyd to get open. I think that's when I start to question is when they don't have all those guys out there. When, you know, you love giving Joe Burrow all five options because he can usually pick the right one when that's the case. But sometimes, you know, sometimes there is no right one when that fifth option is a guy you don't want to be throwing to. So, like, I do think that that's where I start to worry is when, you know, when Trenton Irwin, Tanner Hudson, Drew Sample are like the guys out there, it's like you'd almost rather have them in the block so that Joe Burrow has more time so that he can create tickets to the guys who are the true playmakers of that offense. Mm-hmm. So I think that's when I start to question kind of the offensive philosophy. But when they are fully healthy, you want all those guys being an option in any given play. So you do want to, you know, you'd rather trust that Joe Burrow, even under pressure, can make some plays with the football. So it's a give and take, but I do think, yeah, this past game, I think there are some calls that they would want back just in terms of they're really only two guys that he wanted to go to. You know, that's why Chase and Boyd both went up for over 100 yards in that game and give him a little more help in pass protection to do so.
I mean, I think the Irv Smith thing, I mean, we could spend a whole episode on just what a swing and a miss that one was for the Bengals. And it's really showing because Tanner Hudson has now leapfrogged Irv as the pass catching tight end option. And nobody was expecting that to be the case. But the offensive line, Orlando Brown signed several-year deal. Cordell Volson is still on his rookie deal. Ted Karras, I believe, signed through next year. Kappa, I think, as well. And then Jonah, what happens after this year? In your way too early projection, which position do you think they'll have to target, whether it be free agency or the draft on the offensive line, since we're talking about it?
I think, especially in this class that has some good tackle talent that are more like maybe more projects, I think you have to draft a tackle, just a guy, and maybe even start him at guard, but you just have to get some options in the mix. And now they have other options on the interior, like Jack Harmon. If they, you know, if one of either Volson or Kappa went down, I don't think he'd be a liability at guard. Right. But if you had Orlando Brown or Jonah Williams go down right now, they'd be in big trouble, maybe even more trouble than they are right now. So yeah, I do think offensive tackle, they've obviously kind of just went status quo in the draft in the early rounds at that position lately. But I do think it might be the year that it's like, hey, you know, we love going best player available, but we also have to protect our investment at the quarterback position a little bit more.
Right. And this is a great turning point to what I want to talk about, because we're talking about the trenches, and that's where I was really thinking about it today, because Trey Hendrickson, probably not going to play on Thursday night. Sam Hubbard, probably not going to play on Thursday night. Sam Hubbard won't ever jump off the stat sheet, but you, as someone who watches film daily and watches the Bengals on a weekly basis, holy cow, was it like ever more apparent how important Sam Hubbard is to this defense when he wasn't out there, because they made Singletary look like, you know, he was an all pro rushing for 150 yards. They couldn't set the edge. Like, Sam is just so important. And Lou Anarumo said he's irreplaceable for his role in his defense. But specific to this upcoming game against the Ravens, you're now looking at, and I've been waiting to have this conversation with you about Joseph Osiah, Miles Murphy, because I know you studied their tape in depth. Mm. This game, if there's ever a game where Joseph Osiah, who's in year three, is going to prove, is he capable of being an A1, A2 pass rusher in the NFL, it's this game against the Ravens. But that's a difficult task because you don't rush Lamar like you'd rush any other quarterback. And Miles Murphy, it's like he was a first round pick and they've kind of put the training wheels on him and they're coming off on Thursday. And I think, you know, because people go back and forth, like, should the Bengals have taken Sam Laporta in the first round and they took Miles Murphy? And it's easy to play that game now in hindsight, but they really liked Miles Murphy. And we came into the season being like, whoa, the Bengals defensive line is going to be stacked. It's depth. Osai is going to be good. Miles Murphy is going to be good. Like, they can withstand if Trey or Sam has an injury. Now you're looking at it, and I think there's so many question marks about those two, but I also wanted to ask you about the Bengals in the last couple of years, when you really go through it, and we can spend more time on this in the offseason, but like they've swung and missed on defensive linemen in the draft, whether it be Zach Carter, who the fact that they don't have someone behind DJ Reader who can really clog up the middle and really serve as a tough interior pass rusher. They cut Jeff Gunter. They have not gotten enough out of their round 3 to 6 defensive linemen over the last 4 years. And I could bring up the list we'll spend more time on the Ravens, but the drafting of these guys in the trenches on the defensive line has been a topic of conversation with the Bengals.
Yeah. You would hope to have gotten more out of these guys at this point, and especially Asai and especially Murphy too. But the thing about the Ravens and facing Lamar in particular is that it's not necessarily about how physically talented you are to defend Lamar. It's about how disciplined you are. It's about can you read and react at a high rate? And that's what I worry about when you're forced to play guys like Asai, who hasn't played a ton of ball, even in his career hasn't played a ton of ball. And Miles Murphy, who that was kind of like his worry coming out, was like, speed of the game, is it too much for him? So physically gifted, but is like it going to all turn on in this game? The speeds, like the option runs they do, the window dressing they put on their run game, it asks you to watch and read a lot post snap. And that's something that I do worry about their edges being able to handle in this game. And that's why you want a guy like Sam Hubbard's tremendous at that. That's, you know, why he's out there darn near every single snap of every single game. It's not because he's the most gifted pass rusher, it's because he's not going to make mistakes in the run game like that. Not going to make mistakes as a pass rusher, mm-hmm. letting guys outside the pocket. So it's going to be trial by fire, right? It's I'm not super optimistic, but if there's any game that's going to be like, hey, welcome to the NFL, time to show up, it's going to be this one for those two.
Well, so I asked Lou Anarumo point blank on Monday, and that's, you know, what I really like about both the Bengals coordinators is they're so forthcoming. And I said, would you have hoped Joseph Osai is further along than he is? And he said, yeah, he said his injuries have held him back, but he said, we need more consistency from him. And this goes back to the whole conversation about, there were so many people that questioned why Joseph Osai was playing in the third preseason game when he sprained his ankle. And Zach Taylor said he needed the reps. So the Bengals have been waiting for more consistency from Osai, and that's why he hasn't been on the field. And he said, you know, he had some good plays against the Texans, but there weren't enough consistent plays from him that leaves them being like fully comfortable. And then with Miles, I mean, you nailed it. I asked him what's been the biggest challenge, and he said just the speed of the game and trying to get all of it down and you know, getting that all working for him to be able to go out and play like he is. Who do you think is more talented, Miles Murphy or Joseph Osai?
I think it's Miles Murphy. Honestly, Miles is like freakishly talented, truly. Like mm-hmm. he really is right up there with, you know, there's like a few guys who are kind of in their own tier of athletic ability, but he's probably like tier two in terms of edge rushers, just in what he can do. Now that's like, it doesn't mean it's not the end all be all, but it's a great starting point for that position because, you know, there's, it's as much as it's, you know, we're talking about the speed of the game, it's still a simple, your role in any given play is still simple. It's just getting reps at it, repeating it, simplifying that role as much as possible, and then just like not having to think at some point. You're hoping at some point he's played enough football, has seen enough things, that their thinking is gone. He's just playing fast. And then when he wants to play fast, I mean, he is just explosive and strong as can be. So you see it in flashes, and you've seen it in flashes this year, but still really far behind in terms of the down consistency.
So based off what you watched in week two, when these two teams won, obviously the Ravens beat the Bengals, but it was close. The Bengals had their chances to take that game and win. And that was really the first game where Burrow looked healthy before he re-injured his calf at the end of that game. And then that started the clock again for when he was going to get that calf better. What do the Bengals need to do to contain Lamar? Like, what did you see the Cleveland Browns do that maybe the Bengals could replicate this week?
Well, the Browns have an insanely talented defense. Yeah. I don't think there's anything you can really do necessarily to replicate like what the Browns throw at them. But I do think that this passing offense is not like they have undersized wide receivers. They don't have a lot of guys that are truly, you know, physical presence on the outside. And the way that offense is run, it's a lot of over the middle of the field stuff. And that's what the Bengals do a really good job, in my opinion, of taking away for a lot of different teams, is those linebackers are very disciplined. They kind of just do a very good job of defending the middle of the football field. So I think forcing Lamar to throw outside the numbers is going to be a key to this game. That's where he's probably the worst at, his like pure go balls on the outside. I think you're going to give some of those up in this game, because you're going to want to play a little tighter in to the middle of the football field, because that's where Lamar likes to throw. And he's just not as good when he has to throw outside the numbers. And he misses, you know, even missing this past week, a number of go balls on the outside that could have been bigger plays. So I think that is a matchup that I think they can win, is versus the passing game. I'm more worried about the other side of the football, passing against this Ravens attack, because they just do so much defensively and have so much speed in the middle of the field, and their linebackers and Kyle Hamilton, their safety, that they present a ton of problems with a quick passing game. If you want to try to quick pass against this team consistently, that they'll make you pay eventually with it, because of how much window dressing and how much they disguise they put on any given play, even like early rundowns they're disguising. So I think that's the biggest thing, is how to get around that, because this isn't 4 years ago, Lamar. What was it, 2019 Lamar against the Bengals, where he just ran wild in two games against them. I think this is a defense that's much better equipped to handle Lamar Jackson and that offense right now. But it's just, you know, they're probably still going to score in the 20s. Can you score in the 20s against this Ravens defense?
Well, between these two teams, it almost always comes down to one possession. And it usually comes down to the turnover differential. And last year, when the Bengals played at M&T Bank Stadium, it was a night game. Joe Burrow's buddy, Patrick Queen, picked him off. And, you know, that ended up being a really pivotal point in the game. And then they weren't able to win from that. But it's certainly, the Bengals are going to have their work cut out for them, because going into what's going to be a crazy environment on Thursday night, it's going to be challenging. If you had to pick one matchup, whether it be on offense or defense, that intrigues you the most, just as a football mind, what is it?
That's great. I mean, I think Ja'Marr Chase against Marlon Humphrey is always must-see TV. He gave him, what, over 200 yards? What was that, a couple years ago? Mm-hmm.
Marlon might not play.
Oh, is he going to be out this game? Okay, I didn't even realize that. So if he doesn't play, then it might even be more must-see TV on the outside there, because he really is their lone corner that worries me. I think Brandon Stevens, some of the other guys that they have in the fold there, aren't nearly obviously as talented as Marlon Humphrey is. So if he doesn't play, I think you gotta go into the play action well, and you gotta dial up more deep shots than you've dialed up this season, because that's where they'd be susceptible to.
Yeah, he left the game with an injury, but I fear that it might be a torn Achilles, but it wasn't torn. It's just strained. So I haven't gotten the injury report yet today, but he might not play. There's a couple injuries that Ronnie Stanley might not play either. So that could be beneficial. But I mean, I think the Bengals are kind of used to not seeing Ronnie Stanley. He's had a rough go around in terms of his ability to stay on the field, which is a bummer. I think the matchup with Dax Hill and Mark Andrews is a really important one. And that's what I also wanted to ask you about. So this week, Lou Anarumo also was asked about, if you've noticed, he's been rotating Jordan Battle and Nick Scott, and then still rotating Cheeto and DJ Turner a little bit on the outside. And he was asked, would you have liked to have both of those spots solidified by now? And he said, yeah. And then he was asked, well, why do you keep playing them? And he said he feels like the both of them give them the best chance. And that basically means not one of them has solidified the spot enough where he feels like they should play all the reps with full confidence. What do you think about the facts, like with what the Ravens want to do, how they could maybe take advantage of, or what they're going to try and do with the Bengals' safety situation?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to get Zay Flowers is the one that they'll probably try to get on Nick Scott, right? I was you know, from what I did watch on tape this past week, I was very not impressed with Scott, just in terms of like guys running wild at him down as a deep safety, and really kind of just the urgency with for him to go make plays was not there. It was more like he was wanting to avoid giving up a big play as opposed to wanting to try to prevent any play whatsoever. And that's something that, you know, you're not going to be able to do against this Ravens offense. A guy like Zay Flowers, if you're worried about giving up big plays against Zay Flowers, he's just going to eat you up at the intermediate level. He's just going to run vertically on you and then stop and then be wide open. So I think that's something that I would imagine you'll see from this Ravens offense, is trying to get Zay Flowers down the football field in this game against a guy like Nick Scott.
It's just going to be a great matchup. I mean, the coaching is like at the highest level, in my opinion, in this game, with the chess match between Mike McDonald and Lou Anarumo on defense. And then, you know, you can say what you want that Lamar has had the Bengals number, but it's been the Bengals the last couple of years that have beaten the Ravens when it matters most with their offense. So how Zach Taylor, you know, what him and Brian come up with against like what Todd Monken wants to do with how they're rolling. So I think it's just going to be a great game. And I'm really looking forward to blowing your phone up about it as the game is going on. So before I let you go, do you have a prediction?
Oof, this one, I do have a prediction. It's not going to be pretty, though. I know I picked the Bengals most times this year, but I think I have to pick the Ravens in this one. I think it'll be low scoring, though. I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-17 Ravens, sadly. But hopefully I'm wrong. I would just say hopefully I'm wrong here.
Yeah, I think it. I think you nailed it on the score. Like, I don't think it. I think you're looking at a 20-24-17, you know, 13 type of production level, because both these defenses are going to try and, you know, take everything away. So it should be a crazy matchup that I'm really excited to watch, and I'm sure you are too. So I will be back with you next week, and we can talk about, we'll get the weekend off to digress, get our thoughts back together about it, and then we'll be able to recap it. And then get ready for the Bengals that will face the Steelers on Thanksgiving week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Kelsey.